You are listening to BensTorah.com.
We only refer to the fact that Hanukkah is a special time to learn Torah. Sometimes in the yeshivas they joke that the Yevanim may have won this one because it says Lashkicham Torasecha, but they try to make us forget the Torah after so many parties and chagigas and everything by the end of the week. So people don't tend to learn as much during Hanukkah. Baruch Hashem, the Rebbe Shalom made it in such a way this year that it's a really great bonus for the Balabatim. Because a lot of people are off a couple of days, and even those who have worked this week, a little bit maybe a lighter schedule. So it's a very, very special opportunity. Really, Ashrecha, Meshkech to all of you who coordinate and organize to be able to create a Yom Iyun, a Yom Limu together. So really, Ashrecha, truly in the spirit of Hanukkah. So I want to learn a sugi together. A sugi that really, in a sense, has two parts to it. It's a sugya of Neiros Chanukah as it relates to the Mokom Hadlocha and the Zman Hadlocha, the precise location to light, as well as the precise correct time to light. But the reason why I'm calling these two parts of the sugya is because we really have to learn the sugya through the eyes of Chazal, as to when and where Hadlochas Neiros took place in the days of Chazal, and then see somewhat of a little bit of a shift, how that mitzvah plays out the Zman Hazeh as well. That the hadlaka of Neiros Chanukah, the way we perform the mitzvah bizman hazeh, the makom is a slightly nuanced difference. The zman is even a little bit of a slightly nuanced difference. And to try to see exactly what happened, try to understand the background in terms of the lumdus and in terms of halacha lemaisa, as to how hadlakas Neiros Chanukah, both in terms of time and place, plays out. I think that it's appropriate to really learn through a sugya of this nature, specifically on Chanukah, because the Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos that the Gemara raises the question, how could we recite a bracha when we light the menorah of Asher Kiddushan Mitzvayisa V'tzivanu? It's not really true. The Kiddush Baruch Hu wasn't mitzava us to light the Neiros Chanukah. It's only a mitzvah midrabbanon. So how could we make such a statement when we're performing a mitzvah midrabbanon that the Rabban Shalom commanded us? To which the Gemara concludes, no, we are permitted and we're required to recite this bracha because lo sosem in adova shegid l'chay aminu smol, that we are not permitted to veer away from the Chachmei HaTorah. We have to perform mitzvahs midrabbanon as well. And therefore, we can say with complete certainty, Asher Kiddushan Mitzvayisa V'tzivanu, the Rabban Shalom was mekadish us and mitzava to us to listen to Chazal, and Chazal instituted the mitzvah of Hadlochas HaMenorah, and therefore we can recite the bracha no less than we do on the mitzvah D'Oraisa. The Torah tells us in the parasha of Lo Sosor, that one has to listen to the Chachmei HaTorah, that the Shoftim, the Dayanim, the Rabbanim, in each and every generation have to understand the Torah properly, have to interpret the Torah properly, and to be able to apply the Dini HaTorah properly. So Neiros Chanukah is really a perfect example of something where, as we'll see as the sugya goes, develops for us, certain mitzvah, certain physical changes happen, certain realities happen, which in a sense forced Chazal and forced the Rishonim and forced the Chachmei HaTorah to understand how to perform the mitzvah in the proper setting, even though there was slight nuances of changes over the years, to see how do we perform the original takana of Hadlochas Neiros in the proper setting, bizman hazeh, b'mokom hazeh. So let's try to go back to the background, go through the mitzvah to the eyes of Chazal and see how it plays out. The Gemara tells us in the beginning of the second parak of Masechet Shabbos, in the famous sugya of Chanukah, that there is a very specific makom, very specific location for Hadlochas Neiros Chanukah. The reason why Chazal was so precise as to delineate where the Hadlochas Neiros has to take place is clearly because we are trying to accomplish something called Pirsumei Nisa. It is not just enough to simply light the mitzvah. Unlike other mitzvahs, it doesn't really matter where I eat my matzah, it doesn't really matter where I hear my shofar, where I shake my lulav. When it comes to Neiros Chanukah, so the goal is to maximize Pirsumei Nisa, and therefore we want the light in the place that in fact accomplishes the utmost in terms of Pirsumei Nisa. However, Chazal were walking a tightrope because on the one hand, we're opting to light in a place to maximize Pirsumei Nisa. On the other hand, Chazal also instituted the mitzvah Ner Ishu Beiso, that the mitzvah is fundamentally performed in one's family setting, in one's home setting, and therefore it's really inappropriate for a person to think, well, we'll go for the maximum Pirsumei Nisa, so we'll light on a highway, we'll light on the bridge, we'll light in the middle of the street somewhere, and that'll get the most traffic. So no, we have to scale back a moment because we want to also get mitzvah nicha pescha bias. We want to get it in terms of the bias as well. So we're really walking in an almost impossible tightrope. On the one hand, we're trying to maximize Pirsumei Nisa. On the other hand, we're trying to get it to still be near Ishu Beiso. So how do we solve that dilemma? So Chazal instituted the following, that if all else is equal, everything else, if it's possible, one is supposed to light the menorah al Pesach beis hamibachutz, one is supposed to light it in the setting of one's home, but not literally inside the home, rather mibachutz, right immediately outside one's home. That's the best place in the world to light Neris Chanukah, because then you get, in a sense, the best of both worlds. You get mibachutz, so you get the outside traffic. On the other hand, it's still very much connected to one's home. It's right outside. Al-Tevach HaSamuch, it's right immediately outside one's door. And one gets the kiyum of Nerishu Beiso, one gets the fulfillment of Pirsim Anisa, and that's the best possible way to light Neris Chanukah. There is actually a machlokes that we're showing them. It's a very technical machlokes. And in the days of Chazal, the way the layout of the cities generally were, those who may remember from Maseches Erevin, that there were houses, there were private homes that opened into chatzeros, into common courtyards, then the courtyards would open into mavuos, into alleyways, eventually leading out to the street. So there's machlokes Rashi and Tosos, where is the absolute best place to light the menorah, and we generally follow the view. I mean, in theory, we follow. For us, that's not all that practical anymore. But we generally follow the view of Tosfos, what's called Pesach Achotzer Mibachutz. So, right at the end of the outside of one's courtyard, leading into the actual street, that's considered to be the optimal place of lighting Neris Chanukah. Then the Gemara in the same sugya, Masechta Shabbos, Daf Chaf Aleph, concedes that sometimes that is not practical. Sometimes it's not practical, perhaps the person doesn't have that type of a layout to light there. Sometimes a person is living on a top story, at a top floor, where you may not have the ability to light in the classic place. So the Gemara speaks about lighting on a chalon ha-samach l'shisarabim. A person can also, in a sense, accomplish both of these feats. He can light the menorah in the private area close enough to his house, and also accomplish pursuma nisa. That's not as bad. Not as great, but not terrible either. And then the Gemara almost throws its hands up and says, sometimes you live in a situation where it's just not feasible, just not practical to maximize on pursuma nisa. What if you live in a time, it's called b'shasa sakona. You live in a time of danger. Now danger can have many, many different meanings to it. Danger can mean literally the non-Jews are going to come and actually kill you if they see you lighting the menorah. Maybe the non-Jews won't kill you, but they'll confiscate your menorah. Maybe there are other potential sakonos that may be around. And come Chazal and finally throw their hands up and say, "B'shasa sakona manicha al shulchan v'dayo." One can light the menorah simply on one's table, not outside. There's no window, nothing. Manicha al shulchan v'dayo, and that's also acceptable for halachas neiros. So it's clear from the Gemara that that's the third option. That's the worst case scenario. But still, afal pichein, Chazal do conclude manicha al shulchan v'dayo. What happened to Pursume Nisa? Nobody's seeing the menorah. So mistumble, what Chazal mean is that even though you don't have the maximum of Pursume Nisa, you still have a little bit of Pursume Nisa. And who is that? Well, you're seeing it, your wife is seeing it, your kids are seeing it, your family members are seeing it. So presumably that also suffices to be a quasi-Pursume Nisa. So again, within Bizman Chazal, there's clearly an optimal place to light, there's a secondary place to light, and then when all else fails, Manichla al Shulchan Ovidayo. And the reason that forced us to reach that point is the quote-unquote situation of Shasa Sakona. Tosfos in Masechta Shabbos on the Sugya points out that basically, they're reporting about what was going on in life in the Middle Ages, so it says, say the Balei Tosfos, we basically treat ourselves as a Makom Sakona Bizman Hazeh. Again, either because the non-Jews were going to literally attack us, or perhaps even just confiscate the menorah, whatever the case may be. Tosfos writes that the Minhag HaOlam in those communities was, the communities of Balei Tosfos, is that we basically do Manicha Shulchan Avadayo, because we can no longer afford to light outdoors, the goyim are not going to tolerate it, and therefore, lays brayer, we have no choice, and we perform the mitzvah of Neris Chanukah, albeit in the least mehudar way, at least vis-a-vis this aspect of Neris Chanukah, but we have no choice, and therefore we light mibifnim. So where's that Pursuma Nisa? So Tosfos writes, the Pursuma Nisa is for the Bnei HaBayis. This has been the practice for many, many years, quite some time since the days of the Balei Tosfos, to bring the menorah, in a sense, indoors. When one is able to have it ala chalon, and there's nothing to be concerned with, so then matov, that's wonderful. If one's able to have it ala chalon, so at least to get a little bit of the original Pesuma Nisa. But if all else fails, so then manicha shulchan avadayo is basically the way that has been governing halachas neiros for quite some time. The question is, should we reevaluate this psach of the Balei Tosfos? Maybe the facts have changed. Maybe it's no longer considered to be a makom hasakana. Maybe we should, in effect, chadish amenek kedem, we should go back to the old style of lighting Neiros Hanukkah. So there was one suggestion that some poskim said that no, that we have no right to go back to the old way. There was a suggestion that was made that the original takana was this batla. That there must have been at some point the Beis Din, somewhere, somehow, some anonymous Beis Din between the days of the Gemara and today, that must have realized that it's just too dangerous to let us light outdoors. So they in effect revoked that takana, which is a whole question in of itself. What koach, what authority do they have to revoke a takana just like that? So that although there was a suggestion that was made that maybe if a person lights outdoors today, one doesn't even fulfill the mitzvah, so generally not assumed that way. We generally assume that of course if one would be able to light outdoors, that would be wonderful, but it may or may not be practical depending on where one lives. So it's where many of us are aware of in Eretz Yisrael, so many people in fact do light outdoors, which is of course the lechatchila shel lechatchila. I don't know what the practice here is in this part of town. I can tell you that in Teaneck, very few people light outdoors. I have seen one or two diehards who still have their menorahs outdoors. I don't know whether anyone does it here, but I think we all assume that we still live in a quasi makom hasakana, even though true, probably we hope no one's going to literally physically attack us for lighting the menorah. But I would imagine that we would probably get some criticism. I imagine we'd probably get some calls from the fire department, and I imagine we would probably have some issues that come up. And therefore, I think we're all assuming, for better or for worse, that we're still a quasi b'shas hasakana, and we're relying on the third level, in a sense, manicha shulchan v'dayo, with the option of the chalon. If you have a chalon that faces out to the street, that would be wonderful. That would be an appropriate way lechatchila. So all of us, for better or for worse, most of us at least, are relying on the manicha shulchan v'dayo. Because the makom hadlocha has, in a sense, changed bizman hazeh, at least the optimal makom hadlocha has altered bizman hazeh, this now impacts very significantly on the zman hadlocha as well. The Gemara in the same sugya has a detailed discussion as to when precisely one is supposed to light the menorah, both in terms of when is the beginning, when is the earliest time to light, and when is the latest time to light. So when it comes to lighting the menorah, interestingly enough, even the fact that we light the menorah at night rather than the daytime is somewhat startling in halacha, because most mitzvahs we perform during the daytime. We shake the lulav in the daytime, we blow the shofar in the daytime, even Kriyas HaMegillah, the main mitzvah is the daytime. The night is, according to many poskim, somewhat of a lower level of obligation. That's why Rabbi Tam writes, well, we say Shechiyonu both at night and the daytime, according to most of our practices, because they're really two different mitzvahs. The Kriyas HaMegillah at night is a lower level, and the higher level is the day. So it's the first time they're fulfilling the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah, Bishle Busa. So when it comes to Neros Chanukah, one would have guessed that Chazal would have instituted to light the menorah in the daytime. And the Rishonim explain they should have, but it's not practical, because if you're going to light the menorah in the daytime, no one's going to see it. So it's not going to have sufficient Pesumah Nisa. So therefore they, in effect, instituted Halachas HaMenorah Dafka at night, even though based on the regular protocols of mitzvahs, it probably should have been the other way around. What's considered to be the night for these purposes? So the Gemara uses the phrase b'shetishaka hachama in terms of the earliest time to light the menorah. The Gemara says that once the sun sets, basically that's what the phrase literally translates to mean, b'shetishaka hachama, we call today of course shkia. So this was the view of many opinions, the Rambam and from the Gaon passed this way. That's pretty much the minhag in many places, especially in Eretz Yisrael, where people light halakas menorah already at the time of shkia. So tonight, the shkia is about 4:35, 4:36. Something like that. So then, according to those poskim, that would be the optimal time, Bizmana Gemara, to light the menorah, Mishet Yishak HaChama. Many are familiar with the other practice, that there are other Rishonim who say Mishet Yishak HaChama doesn't refer to what we call astronomical sunset, it refers to a little bit of a later time. Perhaps with some Rishonim coined the phrase Shkia Shnia, which is a later time in terms of the sun's rays going down. Perhaps what we call Tzeis Kechavim, when the stars come out. And there are actually different practices in Klal Yisrael today. There are many who wait until later to light the menorah, until it's literally dark outside, to fulfill what they consider to be the earliest Zman Hadlocha. So again, the Gemara does speak about the early side of Zman Hadlocha, B'Shet Yishak HaChama, with different opinions as to precisely what that term means. But we're much more focused right now on when is the Sof Zman Hadlocha. When is the end? When is the latest possible time to light the menorah? So here the Gemara gives us a very, very small window to light the menorah. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos that one can light the menorah from Mishet Yishak HaChama, whatever that means, either sunset or stars coming out, Ad Shetichla Regel Min Hashuk, until the people who are out in the marketplace, the last people in the marketplace come in, Gemara describes they were the people who sold the wood for the people who came home and realized they didn't have enough wood in the fireplaces, so they used to have to go out again in the dark. So they had the couple of merchants who were still trying to make the last couple of dollars of the day. They were what we call achetichol regam and ashuk. After that point, then forget it. Then there's no purpose of lighting the menorah. So the simple reading of the Gemara is that whenever that time of achetichol regam and ashuk has passed, so then don't even bother lighting. So you don't gain anything. There's no persimmonis and nobody sees it anyway. How long is this amount of time? So the Gemara never tells us precisely. The Rambam is already the first one to put a number on it. Kichatishah, the Rambam writes. It's approximately a half hour. So that's what we assume the halacha and Shulchan Aruch. That means about a half hour from when the beginning of the Zman HaTlocha is until Kichatishah. That's all there is. That is the Zman HaTlocha. After that, in effect, don't even bother to light the menorah. What would that mean practically for us if one would actually invoke that model of Chazal? So let's say we said Shkia is about 4:35 today. So that means by 5:05 it's too late to light. Most people haven't even got home from Meiriv yet at 5:05. Most people haven't even, they're still in their Shiraim of the Hanukkah parties from the day before. Most people haven't lit by that time. So according to the simple reading of the Gemara, once it's past 5:05, again, assuming that the starting point is Shkia, so then it's too late to light. Even if you want to push the starting point up a little bit till Tzeis Kechavim, so how long is that going to be? Not going to be too much longer either. So by about 5:30, a quarter to 6, fixed. Depending on how Hasidic you're willing to get on this one, it's going to be pretty quickly. It's all going to be over. So does that really play out for us, Lamaisa? This absolute limitation on this Zman HaTlocha, what does this mean for us? So Tosfos in Masechah Shabbos, and that same Tosfos, it also discusses the change in location. Tosfos analyzes the question of what about change of time? Do we have a right today to say that maybe that time that Chazal spoke about, that very, very small window of opportunity, perhaps no longer applies Bizman Hazeh? Why shouldn't it apply Bizman Hazeh? So Tosfos makes a simple calculation. The whole goal of lighting in that small window was if you're lighting the candles outside. So if you're trying to attract the attention of the B'nai Rosh HaSarab and the people who are traveling in the streets, so then it makes a lot of sense to insist that you have to light before Achetichol Regem Rishuk. If I'm going to light at 10 o'clock at night and there's nobody out of the street to see the menorah, what am I accomplishing? But says Tosfos, everything changes Bizman Hazeh. Because since we just proved to you a moment ago that we don't even light outdoors anymore, we live in a Shasa Sakona, so anyway our menorah is positioned indoors, so we're not gaining much from the people outside anyway. Our entire hadlokah is geared towards the B'nai HaBayis. So at what point is considered to be the Zman HaTlocha? So Tosfos writes, well, whenever there are B'nai HaBayis around. So the same way in the days of Chazal, as long as there were B'nai Rosh HaSarabim, there were people walking in the public streets who were still walking around, that's called the Zman HaTlocha. The Zman Hazeh, our HaTlocha, the equivalent of our Achetichol Regem and Ashuk, is the time when the B'nai HaBayis are around. That's what Tosfos writes. And that's what there are more quotes to HaTlocha, and that is clearly has become our practice today. We light the menorah 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock, whenever we get around to lighting the menorah, whenever the B'nai HaBayis are around, so that's considered to be a perfectly acceptable Zman HaTlocha, and we, in effect, ignore Achetichol Regem and Ashuk B'Zman Hazeh. Do we totally ignore it? Has the entire concept of Achetichol Regem and Ashuk completely left the halachic discussion Bizman Hazeh? So the Mishnah Berurah says not entirely. The Mishnah Berurah says that we could have an equivalent of the Gemara's dilemma of after Achetichol Regem and Ashuk, if there are no B'nai HaBayis around anymore. Let's say a person comes home very, very late and he hasn't lit the menorah yet and everybody's sleeping. So the Mishnah Berurah says, wait a second, you're going to light the menorah at 2 o'clock in the morning and there's nobody around. So that's the halakha equivalent of Bizman Chazal of lighting the menorah outside after Achetichol Regem and Ashuk. So yes, it's true that Tosfos equated the B'nai HaBayis for us to the B'nai Rosh HaSarabim of old. So just as when the B'nai Rosh HaSarabim are no longer present, so it's too late, so too when the B'nai HaBayis aren't present because they're sleeping, so it's also too late, and one wouldn't be able to light the menorah at that point anymore. Therefore, the Mishnah Berurah has this famous psak where he writes that you have no choice, you have to light the menorah, you have to wake somebody up. Like, this is the Chofetz Chaim, the Chofetz Chaim, I'm sure I didn't say this lightly, he said, well, what do you want? You have no choice, you have to wake somebody up in order to be yelled to the mitzvah of Lachas Neiris. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein disagreed with that psak of the Chofetz Chaim, that psak of the Mishnah Berurah. Rabbi Moshe maintained that why is it absolutely critical that there be somebody around to see the menorah? If Moshe posed the question, what would the din be if a person lives by himself? Well, it's not 2 o'clock in the morning. It's 6 o'clock in the evening, and he's living on the 20th floor. There's no windows that face the street. Nobody could see from the street anyway. There's nobody around. There are no Bnei Abayis. There are no Rishis Arabim. Would anybody say he doesn't light a menorah? Of course he lights the menorah. So where's the Pursume Nisa? Himself. He is the Pursume Nisa. He's looking at the menorah. He's seeing his Mosur. I'm showing. That's the Pursume Nisa. It's almost Mashal Amad Avadomeh. Moshe doesn't give this example, but it sounds almost like a similar idea in Halacha. We know that at the Seder, you're supposed to say the Manashtana, but you're supposed to speak to somebody else. We got it to Levincha. If a person doesn't have a child, they should speak to the wife, doesn't have a wife, speak to a friend, somebody. And if all else fails, you speak to yourself. So the din is, if a person is sitting on his own Seder with nobody around, so he says the Manashtana, and he answers, Avod Mayinu. So, where's the Vigata Levincha? So, b'di'evit. That's also good. So, to Ramesh writes, if a person's stuck by himself, that's also good. So, one can recite the brachas on the menorah, light the menorah, b'yotzei the mitzvah, and not necessary to wake anybody else up. So, then,
machloket. There's no choice. There's a choice. I'm going to tell people. In which case, basically, there is no choice. There's no one else.
Right, so
that... Is there really a regime to change it?
I'm not sure. I don't know whether it's changed. I think Ramesha understood that to be batriach somebody, to wake somebody up, that's almost like a no choice. Because you know what I mean? There's somebody in the next room, you can call them in. So I think even Ramesha can see that that's a good idea. But Ramesha apparently held that. To wake somebody up, that's not considered to be a possibility.
Why don't we say the same thing? You're lighting there, and from the moment when you're lighting, you're seeing the nearest, and you're being yotzei the mitzvah. If the avid, you're saying that you yourself can be the beneficiary of the particular regimen of the Pursuit Nisa.
It's a very, very powerful question. I mean, according to Rav Moshe Svara, that you always have that, that built-in Pursuit Nisa for yourself, so how could there ever be a self-sabalad
lofa?
But we did in the Gemara, it sounds like we did in the Gemara that if you miss the time, don't even bother lighting. The Gemara says, the Elo Madlik, Elo Adlik Madlik, it's 2 days in the Gemara, but according to one opinion in the Gemara, the Elo Adlik Madlik, if you goof, if you missed it, so it's over, don't waste your time. According to Ramesha, why? I can still count on it, yeah, it's not a very big detail according to Ramesha. Do we have a... also a little bit of a remnant at Shetichel Regman Ashok, even for us, even we who light indoors, let's not forget, most of us light indoors, but anyone who has a private home, so is lighting in the window, most probably, so we are getting a little bit of Pursuma Nisa. We are almost fulfilling what the Gemara considered to be the second level, Misha Darbi Aliyah, in the days of the Gemara, if you didn't have access to light a Pesach HaChotzer, but you had a Chalon, a Samach L'Shus Rabim, so you would light there, so Bizman Hazeh, we can't light outside, for whatever Shas HaSakonim, we're not going to light outside, but we still are mahadah to try to light it in the chalona samach l'shus harabim. So it's not true that bizman hazeh we're completely ignoring the b'nei b'shus harabim. We are focusing on the b'nei b'shus harabim. So maybe one could argue that if we are focusing on the b'nei b'shus harabim today a little bit, okay, in our heart of hearts, we all know that even if we wouldn't have a chalon, we would still light with the bracha. But we who are trying to get a little bit of the Pursuma Nisa for the B'nai Rishis Rabim, maybe we should still take Achet Techla Rechem and Ashok a little seriously. So maybe we should try to light within the time, what used to be the Zman of Achet Techla Rechem and Ashok. Another question becomes, well, is that really true at all, Bizman is there? Is that extrapolation correct? That even if we're lighting today a little bit geared towards the B'nai B'shus HaRabim, does the number, the magic number of the Rambam really make any sense? The Gemara never gave a time, the Gemara never put out minutes on Achet Techla Rechem and Ashok. The Gemara was describing, when you live in Eretz Yisrael, you live in Bavel, in the years, whatever it was, 2,000 years ago, so Achet Techla Rechem and Ashok was such and such, so the Rambam, in interpreting the Gemara, says it corresponds to about a half hour. So yes, when the Rambam lived in Cairo, so after a half hour, there probably weren't too many people walking the streets. Today, things have changed. We can thank Edison for that. So the world has changed entirely. People are out much, much later, obviously, because of electricity. So maybe, even if we're working within the realm of Achet Techla Rechem and Ashok, maybe that changed, Bizman Hazeh. So forget about the B'nai Abayis for a moment. Even if there are no B'nai Abayis, even if you don't accept Rav Moshe, if I'm really gearing my hadlaka towards the B'nai Rishis Rabim, so maybe I still have much longer than in the days of Chazal, because as long as there's traffic on my block, driving past my Neiros, that would be acceptable. At what time would that be Achet Techla Rechem and Ashok? So that's going to be a very subjective question. It's going to depend on what block you live on. Depends on how much traffic. If you live in the middle of Midtown and you're lighting in a way that people in the street could see you, if you're on a lower floor, so then I think they say the city never sleeps. I don't know what Central Avenue, I don't know what the curfew is in Central Avenue. I know on my block in Bergenfield. So, I imagine by 11, 12 o'clock at night, there aren't too many cars. But at 8 o'clock at night, there are plenty of cars driving down. So I would almost say the opposite. I would almost say that perhaps, a little bit radical, if a person is really, really worried about a shetichel regel and a shuk, maybe it's better to light later than earlier. Because if I would light my menorah at 4:30 in the afternoon, that's probably not a shetichel regel and a shuk. There's no one here. People are still at work. This week, maybe a better week. Okay, I mean, is that, okay, I mean, the truth is that nobody, most people aren't walking bizman as that, but, you know, driving slowly, when you see the, as long as you chop, your eyes can't catch the nearest. That's exactly what we're challenging. That's what we're questioning. We're questioning, is this somehow an absolute form of written in stone, this number of a half hour? So again, the Gemara doesn't say half hour. The Gemara says, that's a different recommendation. The Rambam tells you, practically speaking, that shetichel regel mishuk is a half hour. So this is not my suggestion. This may be both a chumra and a kula, what we are suggesting. Namely, if you're going to tell me that shetichel regel mishuk changes the fiyah macham and fiyah zman, that can work for you and against you. It can work for you because it can give you much later time to light. It may, in theory, work against you because, as you point out correctly, there's another halacha that the Gemara also says, l'shiura, that you have to put in enough oil that the oil would burn at shetichel regel mishuk. That's the goal. Now, if the kemahs go out beforehand, so we know the din is kipsa ein zochem klal. The kemahs go out by themselves, it wasn't really your fault. So you don't, b'dieved, you don't really have to relight it. L'chatchila, it's a hiddu, but you're not obligated to relight it. But you have to put in enough oil to burn at shetichel regel mishuk. So we always think, how much oil? Every little kid knows, a half hour, it's got to burn for a half hour. Where did that come from? That came from that Rambam, Hilchos Chanukah. The Rambam says the shear about shetichel regel mishuk is a half hour. That's the amount of oil they have to put in. According to what we're suggesting, the whole world may be turned upside down, Hilchos Chanukah. Bein lekula, bein lechumra. That lekula is, you can be lenient, you can light 10, 11 o'clock at night. On the other hand, if you light at 5 o'clock, maybe you have to put in enough oil at shetichel regel mishuk. Now, I don't have... I should get like a little kickback from the oil companies in this one. That one means giant denarius. So who suggested this? This is quoted from the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav was cheshish to this idea. They say, the way the story is told about the Brisker Rav, that those who know where the Brisker Rav lived, so those who remember Geula, not Geula of Tavshina and Zion, but Geula of a little bit years gone by, there was a famous landmark in Geula. They don't talk about it anymore, but it was called the Edison Movie Theater. So those who remember, up from Kikar Shabbat, a little bit up the block. Yeah. So I still remember when I was living in Yeshiva, I don't think that there were any movies being shown there, but I still remember it was there.
Edison.
Now,
Edison.
Yeah, the Edison, yeah. So the Brisker apparently lives right across the street from the Edison Movie Theater. So he was Choshesh, he lived at Shkia, like the Tamid HaGro, like the Tamid HaGrishalayim, he lived at Shkia, but he was Choshesh that he should have enough oil at Shetichel regel mishuk. What was Tichel Regel Menashuk? Till the end of the last showing of the last movie in the Edison Theater. So the way the story goes that the Brisker Rav put in 7-8 hours worth of oil because he was Cheshish, and that may be a concern of Asher Tichel Regel Menashuk.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
It's also a question. Where did that, if we're almost taking away the whole Shetichel regel mishuk, how come the half hour remain behind? So we assume, even though it's not clear in the Rishonim, there are some Rishonim who don't say this, but we seem to assume the halacha that somehow there was a takon of a half hour. That since Bizman Chazal, that was the Shetichel regel mishuk. So a half hour is the absolute minimum. It's not pashing the Gemara like that, it's not even pashing the Rishonim like that, but that seems to be the way that's been assumed over the years, that it's considered. There are Rishonim who say that explicitly, but not everybody says that. I was telling over, I was learning this, some of the sugyas of Neres Chanukah with my oldest son on Matzah Shabbos. So we got to the sugya, we were talking a little bit about Shetichel regel mishuk. So I told him about this ma'ase from the Brisker Rav. So he asked me, the eyes of a teenager. So he said to me, how did the Brisker Rav know when the last showing in the Edison Theater was? So I said, I can't believe that he went across the street to ask. He must have sent one of the Tamashim to ask him. So again, I'm not suggesting this chumrah as a real practice, but we do find this in a sense the kula that we are willing to be a little bit more makel in terms of the quote unquote sof zman halacha bizman hazeh for two reasons. That we're very makel on the sof zman halacha today because number one, our halacha is in fact geared primarily for the bnei habayis, so we already have toises in there to rely on. And number two, even that little bit of a kiyum that we have for the bnei v'shesarabim probably changes a little bit bizman hazeh. I know in the dorms, we asked in yeshiva. So the question is always asked, when is the latest time to light? For those who know the YU dormitory situation, I don't think there's ever a tichle rechem in a shuk. 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, that's still very much alive and well. So it's hard to say there's any latest time. The latest time, the absolute latest time is alos ha-shachar. I mean, later than alos ha-shachar, that's already the next day. There is an interesting question. The Polsky message touches a little bit on the half hour story. When is the actual sof, and all said and done, what's the absolute latest time for lighting the menorah? So alos ha-shachar. What if I light within a half hour of alos ha-shachar? So I lit the menorah at a time when it's still technically laila. On the other hand, it doesn't even have the ability to burn at night, because once it's ready, alos ha-shachar, right the next day. So is that good? So let's say, if I'm going to take alos ha-shachar 6 o'clock in the morning, can I light the menorah 10 to 6 or not? So it's a nice, interesting lomdish shaila. I got the shaila halacha l'maisa last year. Someone called me with the following shaila. It's a little bit of a touch on some of the traveling issues I think Rabbi Rollin may have touched on in another shiur, about a person told me that they were, if I'm not mistaken, I think they were driving from Cleveland to Baltimore. If I have the two destinations wrong, so bear with me. I think they were going from Cleveland to Baltimore, and they called me that they didn't want to light in Cleveland. They weren't sleeping over. It's a complicated story, and they were trying to figure out they're going to get to Baltimore enough time to light. So as they're pulling out of Cleveland, they say, Rabbi Solovsky, according to Waze, we're supposed to pull into Baltimore at 5:58, a.m., and I lost the shot at 6:02 or something, Only in today's world could a person call 12 hours in advance and tell you exactly what moment. So I said that there is a small chance that you may have to make a rest stop along the way. I don't know if I would be Mishire, but Epshel Tzamtzin, you're going to get in time. So the three have different eights in terms of Allah's neighbors. But in theory, the person would come rolling in at 5:58 and Nalos to 6:02. Could he light with a bracha or not? It would depend on that child about just how serious his half hour his story is, Bizbanis. So, come upon him, we have the.
When did you pass?
When did I pass him? I didn't tell him he should drive faster, but I told him that I think he would be okay. I think he was able to pull in. I think he was able to cheshbon even a little bit more than a half hour. I think so. So, come upon him, we have two major components of Hadlakas Neiros. We have the Mokom Hadlaka, we have the Zman Hadlaka, and almost in a sense the interplay between the two. How Bizman Chazal, so the Mokom and the Zman were a little bit different than Bizman Hazeh. The Mokom has changed a little bit, and because the Mokom has changed a little bit, the Zman has changed in a sense as well. At the end of the day, we still fulfill the mitzvah. We still make a bracha, we still yet to the mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah, albeit with some of the nuances of details have changed a little bit according to the time and place. There is another somewhat of a change in the mitzvah of Halachas Neiros Chanukah, which at least according to some posts can maybe be related to some of the things that we're talking about. We started off the shiur by saying that the mitzvah of Halachas Neiros Chanukah, even though we're aiming for Pesuma Nisa, is very much bias-oriented. Neri Shubeso, and Manich Pesach Bias, Pesach Chotzer. We definitely have, the bias definitely plays a major role in terms of the location of the menorah. And because of this, we find somewhat of a difficulty with a strange minhag Yisrael that doesn't appear in the Gemara. It appears already in the Rishonim. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, and of course we're all familiar with it. The notion of lighting the menorah in shul. And already the Rivash raised the question, lighting the menorah in shul, what do you light the menorah in shul for? Nobody lives in the shul. Again, the way our shul in Bergenfeld happens to be, we live on one side, the shul's on the other side, so it's a little bit less of a question. But both places, nobody lives in the shul. So if nobody lives in the shul, how you light the menorah? Why are you lighting the menorah? Well, we'll see in a second. And what justification do you have to recite a bracha? So the Rivash writes that one thing seems to him to be very clear, that you're not yotze the mitzvah when you light in shul, and therefore even if you were the one who was called upon to light the menorah in shul, you have to light it again when you get home. Because in order to fulfill the mitzvah, it has to be beso, it has to be in the context of one's own home. If that's the case, so then what is the justification to light? So one could argue, well, for some anisa, it's a nice, beautiful thing, but that's not an obligation. The best we can call that is a minug. You could say it's customary, it's become almost a universal custom in Klal Yisrael to light minug. It's a beautiful custom, but the question becomes, can we recite a bracha on this custom? Do we have a right to recite a bracha on something which is only a minug? So there is a fundamental machlekes in the Rishonim between the Baal HaTosfos and the Rambam. In general, when we perform things which are only have the status in halacha of a minhag, not of a real formal mitzvah, not a mitzvah min haTorah, not a mitzvah min drabanan, do we recite brachas or not? So the Gemara in the end of Masechet Sukkah tells us that there was a machlokes whether the taking of the Hoshanas on Hoshana Rabbah that we do today, is that a mitzvah or is that a minhag? So the Gemara, my nafkamina, what's the difference whether it's a minhag or whether it's a mitzvah? So the nafkamina being, do you recite a bracha? If it's a mitzvah, even though it's only mitzvah d'rabbanan, you would recite a bracha, shekidishan, mitzvah, mitzvah, well, chibat arav, whatever the bracha would be. If it's only a minhag, then no bracha will be recited. Now we're of course familiar with the fact that we paskin that it's only a minhag, and therefore we in fact do not recite a bracha when we bang the shanas on a shana rabba. It's based on this that the Rambam extrapolated and said, not only is the banging of the Hoshanas a minhag that doesn't warrant a bracha, any type of a minhag that's done, if it's not a formal takanas hachamim, no bracha is recited. And therefore the Rambam said, the saying of Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is not a mitzvah. The Gemara is explicit about this. The Gemara says that it was a minhag. And in the days of Chazal, it wasn't even a universal minhag. It was only a minhag in certain places. The Gemara tells a story when Rav arrived in Bavel. He walked into Shul in Rosh Chodesh and he didn't know what was going on. He didn't know, why are they saying Hallel for? What did he miss? It's only Rosh Chodesh. We don't say Hallel in Rosh Chodesh. And then when he realized the Chap, they were only saying Chatzi Hallel. So then he realized, oh, it's not a real din, it's only a minhag, I can't let them continue what the minhag is. So that minhag has become the universal minhag today, that the Rambam writes, it's only a minhag. And as a minhag, therefore, no bracha should be recited. According to the Rambam, to recite a bracha on Hallel Rosh Chodesh is an absolute bracha levatola. And Rabbi Natam, the Balei HaTosfos, and Masechet Sukkah disagree, and they argue, no, that the recitation of Hallel and Rosh Chodesh is a different type of a minhag. Not all minhagim are the same. Some minhagim do require brachas, and other minhagim don't want brachas. That's, of course, the multi-million dollar question. How do you know which is which? So there's a brisker Rav that discusses it again. It's beyond the scope right now. There are different ways of understanding what the rule is that govern which mitzvahs, which minhagim, I'm sorry, recite brachas on or not. So another possible meaning is the reading of the different Megillos. The Megillos is one potential one. There are one or two others that may run in. Every once in a while you may run into a situation where a woman goes to the mikvah when her requirement to go to the mikvah may be only b'taras minhag, not b'taras din. If it's a dam tohar, I'm sorry if it talks about that, maybe you should or should not recite a bracha. Nah, maybe a few odds and ends ones. But what I say is not really b'taras, but here it's a little bit of a different, it's related, it's the same Rebbeinu Tam, it lines up, the Rishonim do line up the same way, which may be coincidental, or may be deliberate, that's also a question. But I'll call upon him when it comes to minhagim. So according to the Rambam, it's an absolute rule. There's never a bracha in a minhag. And according to Tosfos, yes, sometimes no. So Ashkenazim, who do recite brachas, most Ashkenazim do recite brachas on several minhagim. We do recite brachas on Hallel Rosh Chodesh. So we're not as concerned with the recitation of a bracha when we light the menorah in shul. But Sfaradim have a big problem with this, especially in light of the fact that the Shulchan Aruch himself, who in Hilchos Rosh Chodesh says not to recite a bracha, following the Rambam, does quote the practice of yes reciting a bracha on the menorah in shul. So that's a big problem. That's a big issue. How come the Shulchan Aruch justify the recitation of a bracha? But the real question is, where does this even come from? Whether we should recite a bracha, not recite a bracha? What's the source of this? And the Gemara doesn't speak about this. So what is the background of this minhag, whatever you want to call it, of lighting the menorah in shul? So there are different opinions that are suggested. The Vilna Gaon suggests that this quote-unquote minhag of lighting the menorah in shul should not be understood in a vacuum, the Vilna Gaon says. It's part of a general issue of Pirsumei Nisa. Whenever we perform things at Pirsumei Nisa, we like to perform on two different levels, says the Gra. We perform them as Yechidim, and we perform them in the context of a shul, in the context of a tzibor. The Vilna Gaon compares this practice of lighting the menorah in shul to the practice that many shuls have of reciting Hallel and Shul on the first two nights of Pesach. Why are we reciting Hallel? We're going to say Hallel in a few hours when we get home with the Seder. So the Bir Agur explains that just as we perform Pirsumei Nisa, we publicize the miracle through our Hallel privately, in a sense, in their own Talad Amos, at our own Seder tables, we also do it as a tzibur together in the context of Shul. And the Gros says, Huadin, similarly, we light the menorah as individual family units, and then we light it together as a tzibur as well. So there is some kind of a connection between the two. The Rav was very machmir about this connection. The Rav felt that this minhag of lighting in Shul only makes sense in the context of Shul, and only makes sense in the context of Tefillah as well, because just as Hallel, we actually go out of our way and we light the Hallel right, I'm sorry, we don't light that, we say the Hallel right smack in the middle of the Meirv, in a sense, even before Kaddish Tiskabel. So we try to chaperayim the Lot Mas Neiros right in the middle of tefillah, and that's why we do it specifically between Mincha and Ma'ariv. That's what the Rav had a suggestion, that if you have a shul that doesn't have a Mincha Ma'ariv minyan, that just has a Mincha minyan, this is a Ma'ariv minyan, so maybe it wouldn't be appropriate to light, because he felt that if you have a Ma'ariv minyan, so you can't really light in the middle of davening, so that wouldn't be a Hadlokas HaTzibur. This is like a very rough type of a notion, Hadlokas HaTzibur. Only when you have a Mincha, and then you stop, then you light, then you have a Ma'ariv, that's called Hadlokas HaTzibur. So I remember for years, this was an ongoing issue in the Y Beis Medrash, because many years ago, those remember, well, now we call it the Old Beis Medrash, but it's called the Main Beis Medrash, the Old Main Beis Medrash, so now the high school building. So there used to be a minyan, a daily minyan, balbatim minyan for Mincha Ma'ariv. So they used to light the menorah, right between Mincha Ma'ariv, like any other shul. Then after years, so that minyan ceased to exist, and it was moved over first to a side room, then it stopped altogether, and things, a lot of demographics changed in YU. And the question became, well, should we continue to light at that point? So this becomes the only minigav asena biyadeinu. We've been lighting this menorah for the last 100 years. And others say, yeah, we've been lying here for the last 100 years because there was a minyan of Balabatim. Now the minyan of Balabatim has changed. So again, these I can't tell you about the inner YU politics, how long it takes things to change. But suffice it to say, I'm not sure what they do still. I think they still do like the menorah. It's been around recently. I still think they do like the menorah, notwithstanding the fact that there wasn't a minyan. I think now in the later years, they talk, I did bring back that mincha minyan. So I think now that they built the new base medrash, so there's a now existing mincha minyan, so we're back to chadash minyan kedem. So again, it takes time for things to change a little bit in halacha. Getting back to the story, so one approach of the lighting of the menorah in shul is part of the general issue of persimmonies. But there are others who suggest that no, maybe the lighting in shul is very much related to one of the things we've been talking about. So Mr. Sternbach in the Sefer Modern Muzmanim suggests that maybe the lighting in shul is very much related to the change of where the halakha is being done b'zman hazeh. In the olden days, so the halakha was done outside, it was geared to the whole B'nai Rishisa Rabim. There was a tremendous amount of Pesuminisa. Our Pesuminisa today is very, very watered down. Best we have is Nebuch for the B'nai Bayis. Sometimes the B'nai Bayis are sleeping. We have very, very watered down Pesuminisa. So Sternbach suggests that in the later generations, the days of the Rishonim, when they realized that it's a Shasa Sakana, we can't really get the maximum Persumanisa anymore. So almost as a Tashlumin, almost like a makeup for the Persumanisa that we're losing in our private Adlaka, they instituted this Minag, or this Kwasa Takana, whatever formulation you want to call it, to maximize Persumanisa in a little bit of a different way. So because we're lacking the Persumanisa of the B'nai Rosh Hashanah, so the best we could do is we have a Hadlaka in the context of a Shul. According to this understanding of Rav Sternbach, that the minhag, the kind of whatever you want to call it, of lighting in shul, is not really shul per se. It's not really a halachic rabbin like a tefillah b'tzibah like the Rav saw, or it's not like other achronim writes, almost like a zechel mikdash. It's not so much a shul, it's more of a makam rabbin. So then maybe one could raise the question, maybe it could apply even outside of a shul context. What if you have other kinds of bekamos a rabbin? What if you have you have a Chanukah party, you have a shul dinner, you have, you have the George Washington Bridge, I don't know, you have a lot of places, there are a lot of rabbins. So could one justify the lighting with a bracha based on that? So according to those who saw the lighting of a shul, there's something very, very shul oriented. It's a tefillah, it's a hadlokas hatzibur in the context of tefillah, or it's a zechel mikdash, so then it would be completely inappropriate to light in other kinds of public settings. According to those who, like Sternbach, who are arguing that maybe there's something more than the shul setting to it, it's more of a bakam rabbim, so then one can begin to discuss, maybe one can extrapolate to other places as well. I remember we got married, it was the third night of Hanukkah, in fact, our anniversary, it was the third night of Hanukkah, so I remember, one time I said that a shir in shul, and some people sent us flowers, like the next day, so please do me a favor, save yourselves that. So we got married the third night of Hanukkah, so I remember when we were setting the date for our wedding, Willie was our set of conditions, so everybody asked him, maybe it's not the best time to get married at Hanukkah, it's such a tirch for people, people come home from work, they're lighting and coming and going, maybe we should just push it off for a week. So he quoted to me the Gemara in Masech HaShabbos, where the Gemara says, if a person doesn't have enough money for Neir Shabbos or for Neir Chanukah, so Neir Shabbos takes precedence, because Sholem Bayis is more important than Neir Chanukah. So he said to me, Kal v'chomer, he said, if Sholem Bayis is more important than Neir Chanukah, to build the Bayis is even more important, so don't delay the wedding for another week, it's not Kedai, you get married, people will be matriach, they'll figure out where to light, no problem. So yeah, famous last words. So everyone, we hope everybody figured out the way to light. So at the time, so I said to Rabbi Willie, should we have some kind of a lighting makom rabim at the chasen itself? So some kind of a kiyum, we're going to daven ma'ariv there. So should we have some kind of a makom rabim? So he looked at me like I had just landed on the moon. He said to me, he said, "Not a shul." He was a Talmud of the Rav, not a shul, not a halachas atzibur. He said, "Come on, there's no lighting. That's it. Finish. Everyone to light whenever they get home." Remember at the time, we'll talk about it in a moment about whether a person's allowed to eat before lighting. So unless you appoint someone to remind you, so we had the band announce a couple of times throughout the night. Everyone should remember when they leave. Everyone should remember to light. And there's kind of anyway. So again, we spent a lot of time talking about the issues of hadlokas and eris in terms of the makom hadlokah and in terms of the zman hadlokah, how things were in the olden days, the things of the zman hazeh. But every once in a while, it's a combination of those two factors that throw us off, and probably, as I talked about earlier before, 99% of the neiris Chanukah shailas revolve around some of these types of issues that come up. We're trying to walk that tightrope, walk that balance between the makom hadlokah and the zman hadlokah. Particularly what complicates things is because we started out the sugya by saying that you have to light in your house, by your chotzer, something related to your house. Just to light in the middle of nowhere is not really a fulfillment of Adlocha's neighbors. Now, yes, it's true, Chazal do have a sugya of achsanoi. If a person is actually a guest in somebody's home, they're staying over for some time, so then they can fulfill the mitzvah of Adlocha's neighbors either through Mishtat Lepruta, according to most posts, by lighting their own menorah. But that's only assumed they are at least an achsanoi. If a person is not even an achsanoi, I'm not even a guest, I'm just invited for a meal, I'm here to eat some latkes with you on a Sunday night or something, so that's very, very hard to justify lighting in that place. So this is a very, very common scenario. I'm sure people already had it yesterday, probably people would have it today. They may have, well, good news, I guess, but next Sunday night, it'll be over, because Sunday night won't be Chanukah anymore. But a lot of these shadows play out, that a person is not a... Right, may have a little bit, right? Okay. So, a very, very common scenario is where I want to light the menorah, but I'm not home right now. So, I don't want to light the menorah here because I'm not really going to be yotze here. On the other hand, I want to be able to eat, and the poskim tell us that one is not supposed to eat before one lights the menorah. So, when people call me with this question, which they inevitably do, so I always turn the question back at them. I say to them with a smile, "How come you're only calling me this week?" I said, "What about the other 51 weeks of the year? Nobody ever calls me about eating before davening ma'ariv." So the answer is that eating before davening ma'ariv is a significantly more serious problem than eating before Chanukah candles, because Kriya Shema ma'ariv is a deraisa. So what's the answer? So the answer is that the isser, the prohibition of eating before ma'ariv, or before Chanukah candles, or before mitzvahs, is a gezeira. We're afraid that you may come to forget to do the mitzvah. So if you can set up some kind of a system to remind you, we assume that that's okay. Some people rely on the opinion that if you have a minyan kavua, I daven the same 9 o'clock ma'ariv every night, so maybe that's going to remind you. If a person doesn't have that option, so then he can set an alarm on his phone. So if you set an alarm on your phone, that'll remind you. And most of us are very lenient about that. Most of us do eat before daven ma'ariv on a regular night. Not so concerned, we set an alarm. So presumably the alarm should work for Neiris Chanukah as well. Last night, as I was about to sit down and eat, and I hadn't daven ma'ariv yet, so I was thinking of setting my alarm, a new chumrah. So a briska chumrah, I need two alarms. Because if one alarm is going to go off to remind me of daven ma'ariv, that'll remind me of daven ma'ariv, but that's not going to remind me to light Neiris Chanukah. So I have to set a second alarm to remind me to light Neiris Chanukah also. So a new chumrah is a Baruch Hashem for the phones. I have multiple systems of alarms on them. But with a little bit more seriousness, if a person really wants to eat before lighting Neiris Chanukah, if you're home and you're able to light, you should obviously try to light first. But if it's not practical, so then I think that it's all right to eat beforehand. Provided one has some kind of a system, set an alarm or something to remind you to light the Neiris. At what point can you light when you get home? So a lot of people present the Shaila, say, "Yeah, but if we're at the party, we're not going to be home till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. It's going to be too late to light." Too late to light. That was the first effort this year. I said, the kids, everyone's up. People are still up. So that's technically still okay. We sometimes do have complications if a person is flying. So a person's really, really going to be out of commission. By the time he arrives from his flight, it's going to be, in fact, be the next morning. It's going to be alos hashachar l'choladeus. So then what do you do? So that becomes very, very tricky, because if a person really wasn't home the night before, then you can't really perform the mitzvah. Unless the person was technically an achsanoi, which again touches on a whole other sugya, maybe another time, another place, all the nuances of Achsanoi in terms of what's considered to be an extension of your home or not. But suffice it to say that unless it's halachically considered to be to some degree your home, so it's not an option to light there, and the option may be to in fact light at a significantly later time, even though it's going to be well past the old style of Ashi Techo Yechem Nashuk, but still the newer version of Ashi Techo Yechem Nashuk, and that would still technically be okay. Just to conclude, just a little bit that we see that Chazal is putting a lot of focus on bias. The whole takana was derech bias, chotzer, the bias. You light in the middle of the street, you light in the shul. These are not really halachic hadlokas. The question is, why is that? Why the focus so much on the bias? So perhaps what Chazal is trying to highlight is the notion that, of course, we know that the real celebration of Chanukah is the Chanukah Mikdash. That we rededicated the base of Mikdash, lit the menorah. Things went back to the Beis HaMikdash, and the question becomes, what exactly is the relationship between the Beis HaMikdash and the home in each and every Jew? So we find in other mitzvahs, particularly other Yom Tovim of the year, where the Torah almost draws the line, connects the dots between the goal of Mikdash, of Mishkan, Shechina, and the home in each and every Jew. We find this on Pesach, we find it on Sukkot. We find it in the Yontif of Pesach that all of the mitzvahs, Laila, the whole mitzvahs of the whole week of Pesach, revolve around the home. That the Torah tells us that the original Pesach Mitzrayim, everything was in the home. The Mizbeach, there was no Mizbeach. The Mizbeach was the doorpost. The Mizbeach was the mezuzahs and the mashkof. The Yoch was a bosa. The bosa has to be inside the home. Osotim and Abayas, chutzah, you're not allowed to take the meat outside. The same way you're not allowed to take the meat outside of Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to, in Pesach Mitzrayim, you weren't allowed to take it out of your homes. Shivas Yom, so all of it's a Vatechem. The same way that there's a prohibition of chametz in the Beis HaMikdash all year long, you're not allowed to bake menachos of chametz. On Pesach, in effect, the message that the Torah is telling us is that the Jewish home ultimately is a mikdash. The Vishachanti B'Socham tells us that mikdash is not just something that's far and remote away just for Kohanim, but it speaks to each and every home, has to live up to the standards of mikdash. And the same is true when it comes to Sukkot. When it comes to Sukkot, so you speak about Ashrosa Shechida and Anani HaKovod, and what do? We build a home, and what do we do in the home? The same things we do in our regular home. We do achila, we do lina, we eat, we drink, we sleep, spend time in the home, under the kanfei hashchina, in the mokum of kedusha, and the mitzvah of sukkah, so the schach becomes kadosh. The Gemara says that just as hektish, this is the carbon is kadosh, the schach becomes kadosh. So a person is in effect eating and sleeping in a little mikdash. That's exactly what the mitzvah of sukkah is. So called the tikkun rabbanon came the raisa tikkun. When Chazal instituted a mitzvah the rabbanon of Neres Chanukah, so they had their eyes on Pesach and Sukkot, and they said, we're going to institute a yomtiv, and we're going to take a lochas haMenorah, which is something which is very, very far away from the Jewish home. It's really a mikdash. It's kohanim and they say mikdash. It doesn't speak to us. And for 1 week of the year, 8 days of the year, we become, in a sense, the Kohen Gadol. We become a little mikdash, and we light our candles, dafka, and ask more mikdash. So hopefully the Baruch should give us the siyata d'shmaya to bring those candles, those lights of Kedusha, into our homes, not only the week of Chanukah, but hopefully Mitzvah Shem throughout the entire year.
You have been listening to a presentation of Ben's Torah.com.